purpose of De Ocasio's comments were to vilify Jews. And he was vilifying Jews not only on behalf of Byzantium and the Roman Empire, but mostly on behalf of the Christian church that emerged out of it. When you write such rubbish, blaming Jews of boiling bodies, wearing skins for clothing, making belts of entrails, of forcing people to fight as gladiators, and killing over 200,000 people when they never had an army. Never. Not really. They had some militias in Israel, but even their militias were more involved fighting one another than they were fighting the Romans. But they really never had an army. And they most certainly didn't have an army as refugees in Cyrene. And they didn't host gladiatorial games. And whether they were religious and followed the Talmud, or they were Torah observant, none of the things that were on this list could they have done. And so when De Ocasio wrote this and promoted it on behalf of the Christian church, what he was doing is trying to demonize Jews and justifying the Pauline hatred that is associated with them. Chrysostom is probably the most revered early spokesperson for Christianity. He is considered a saint. His name, first name being John, Chrysostom is his last name. He was the archbishop in Constantine's Constantinople, and therefore amongst the highest ranking individuals in the Eastern Orthodox Church, which at the time was also the Roman Catholic Church. They were united at that time. He wrote and spoke as an orator and preacher around 397 CE. He was among the Christian world's most influential authors and preachers. His anti-Semitic homilies against the Jews claims that Constantine ordered that all Jews should have their ears cut off as a sign that of their treason, and that all Jews, after having their ears cut off, should be exiled. A treason for what, he didn't say, but let's say that their treason was that they didn't support the Roman Catholic Church. During Constantine's reign and thereafter, the Roman Catholic Church became Yahweh's most perverted adversary. During this time, Hilary of Poitiers spoke of the Jews as, quote, a people who had always persisted in iniquity, and out of its abundance of evil glorified themselves in wickedness. In the crime of Christendom, we find Ambrose, another church father, defending a fellow bishop for burning a synagogue. The line is, who cares if a synagogue is burned? It's the home of insanity and of unbelief. Gregory of Nyssa, the same period, 331 to 396 CE, provided the following indictment of early Constantinian Christianity by further besmirching Yah's chosen. This fellow would also have been a contemporary of Theodosius. Slayers of the Lord, murderers of the prophets, adversaries of God, men who show contempt for the law, foes of grace, enemies of their father's faith, advocates of the devil, broods of vipers, slanderers, scoffers, men whose minds are in darkness, the leaven of the Pharisees, assembly of demons, sinners and wicked men, stoners and haters of righteousness, is how the comrade of Theodosius, the man who imposed Christianity on the Roman world, who made the choice not to be a Christian punishable by death. This is what was written. This was what was spoken in that day. So when someone says that Christianity and Judaism share a common bond, they are misleading you unless they share that that common bond is the Christian hatred of Jews. The early Christian church's view of Jews is not unlike the Quran's and therefore Muslims' view of Jews today. They are indistinguishable in this regard. In fact, there's nothing in the Quran that's quite as nasty as this statement from the early Christian church. This was, by the way, written in the Homilies in Christ, Resurrection, Volume 15. And yet, as I've mentioned, the strongest attacks on Jews by Church Father are found in the homilies of Chrysostom, first narrated in his Antioch sermons. He is considered among the most beloved and admired in church history. His name translates in Greek as St. John the Golden Mouthed. His discourses were prompted by the fact that many Christians were meeting on friendly terms with Jews, visiting Jewish homes and attending their synagogues. So Chrysostom preached and wrote, "The Jews sacrifice their children to Satan. They are worse than wild beasts. The synagogue is a brothel, a den of scoundrels, the temple of demons, devoted to idolatrous cults, a criminal assembly of Jews, a place of meeting for the assassins of Christ, a house of ill fame, a dwelling of iniquity, a gulf and abyss of perdition." This is chronicled in the Crime of Christendom and the Homilies Against Jews. This paradigm of Roman Catholic ethics proclaimed, quote, "The Jews have fallen into a condition lower than the vilest animal. Debauchery and drunkenness have brought them to a level of the lusty goat and the pig. They know only one thing, to satisfy their stomachs, to get drunk, to kill, and to beat each other up like stage villains and coachmen." That would be more than one thing, I guess. Satisfying their stomach, getting drunk, killing, and beating each other up. He would write, "The synagogue is a curse, obstinate in its error. She refuses to see or hear. She has deliberately perverted her judgment. She has extinguished herself extinguished with herself the light of the Holy Spirit." This is mainstream Christendom, folks. This idea that Christianity was born out of a Jewish heritage is a complete and utter myth. Christianity was born trying to separate itself from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, trying to separate itself from Yahweh, trying to separate itself from Hebrew, trying to separate itself from the promised land, from Yisrael, trying to separate itself from the chosen people. And it did so by demeaning them. Chrysostom, the golden-mouthed, surmised that the Jews had become a degenerate race because of their odious assassination of Christ, for which crime there is no expiation possible, no indulgence, no pardon, and for which they will always be a people without a nation, enduring a servitude without end. Of course, if you're listening to any of this, and you are a Christian, you ought to be shaken in your boots. For two reasons. One is your religion was born out of an overt hatred of Yisrael, of Yehudim, of the Torah, and of its God. And the consequence for that is grievous. But beyond that, they made all this up. Now, I'm not going to present Jews as poster boys for goodness, but all of this is all contrived, including the notion that Jews killed Christ. Romans killed him. Now, if you're a Christian and you realize that your church fathers were willing to recreate history, to rewrite history, to change history, to promote a myth that became central to the Christian mindset, might you also question what else they changed? Might you, for the first time, understand why there are over 300,000 known variances between the oldest manuscripts, those manuscripts that were written prior to Constantine, and the basis of the Greek translations into English in the Textus Receptus and in the Nestle Aulon, which formed the basis of your English translation? There are 300,000 known variances amongst 180,000 words. Now you know why. You ought to be ashamed if you're a Christian. You ought to be disgusted by your religion. This is how it was born. And you may say, well, I don't hate Jews. I just don't pay any attention to the Torah because, well, you know, that was been obsoleted. I don't attend any of those festivals that they have because, well, you know, I don't have to. I don't honor the Shabbat and keep it special because that was a Jewish thing and they're bad. Yeah, I'm a little anti-Semitic, but I'm not as bad as these guys were. But your religion is. This is how it was born. We'll be back to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. As we continue to consider Chrysostom's homilies, his preaching, it is important for you to recognize his position as the Archbishop of Constantinople. This was a time when Theodosius was emperor. Theodosius is the man whose name is not well known, who probably had the greatest influence on history in Europe. You see, it was Theodosius who imposed Christianity on the Roman Empire, stating anyone who was not willing not only to ascribe to Christianity, but his version of Christianity, which was Nicene Christianity, which was born out of the Council of Nicaea, where a physical man was declared to be holy God, that the totality of God was this caricature of a man. That Nicene Christianity was imposed on everyone in the empire. You either capitulated or you were killed. That's Theodosius. He made Christianity a politicized religion. He is the actual founder of what we would call today the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox Church. As a fully political, fully religious institution. But beyond that, Theodosius imposed something else that would have a terrible and tragic effect for centuries throughout Europe. He imposed the feudal system. So the feudal system that enslaved so many people and elevated lords above them throughout Europe for 1,000 years thereafter, with the exclusive reign of the church and the church appointing monarchs, That was all conceived by Theodosius. This fellow, Chrysostom, was the archbishop of Constantinople while Theodosius was emperor of Rome, ruling from this city. This is not just some offshoot, some crazy dude out there in the hinterlands with his own personal animosity and racist agenda. This is the voice of the Church of Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodox Christianity as it was born. And so it's essential that we shed the myth that Christianity grew out of Judaism. Christianity grew out of a hatred of Judaism. It's also important to recognize that Christianity was not a good guy. It wasn't a noble, peaceful, loving religion when it was conceived. It was conceived in hate. It was conceived by merciless, covetous, power-hungry, vicious men. And it's also important that to understand that Christianity never had an affinity for the truth. Given the chance to report what actually happened or change what happened to suit the religious agenda, the early Christians would always choose to change history to suit their agenda. And they did, constantly, which is why the so-called Christian New Testament is such rubbish. Very little of it is credible. If I were to give you a estimate of how much of your New Testament you could trust as being completely accurate, I tell you that the number is somewhere less than 10%. And it's all a product of the mindset of early Christians, which is what we're considering when we read these homilies, when we read this preaching, when we read this writing from the founders of Christianity. This bastion of Christian and Roman sensibilities elaborated on what he perceived to be his God's punishment of the hated Jews. Quote, "But it was men," says the Jew, "who brought these misfortunes upon us, not God. On the contrary, it was in fact God who brought them about. If you attribute them to men, reflect again that you are supposing men had dared, that they could not have had the power to accomplish them unless it had been God's will. Men would certainly not have made war unless God permitted them. It is not obvious, is it not obvious, that it was because God hated you and rejected you once and for all? We will comment on those words which show the idiocy of Christianity when we return. Stay with us. A great deal of initial Christian mythos is conveyed in this statement, where the leader of the Christian church at the time that Christianity became the state religion, it didn't become the state religion, by the way, under Constantine. Constantine actually never became a Christian. He died a pagan. It became the state religion under Theodosius about 75 years later. And at that time, this was written. He says, you know, you can't blame and this would be the destruction of Israel twice by the Romans. The Jews were saying that men, Romans, came against them and destroyed Israel not once, but twice, once in 70 CE, the other in 133 to 135. And so he's arguing against that. He says, no, it wasn't men. It was God. That it was God who had to allow that it was God's will, not even just God allowing. It had to be God's will that the temple was destroyed. It had to be God's will that the Romans came to destroy Israel. It had to be God's will that Jerusalem would be renamed after Hadrian. It had to be God's will that as a result of Hadrian's victory over Israel, that he changed the name from the province of Yehuda to Palestina. Had to be God's will, according to this moronic, biased, anti-Semitic Christian church father, that it was God's will that every copy the Romans could find of the Torah was burned on the Temple Mount. I mean, that's how ignorant you have to be to promote this. And so what he's trying to say is that, no, you blame the Romans for waging not one but two wars against you and doing all these things. No, you ought to be blaming God. It was God's will that these things happened to you. No, it wasn't. But that's how Christians justify so much stupidity, so much violence, so much covetousness. On another occasion, Chrysostom, the Archbishop of Constantinople, is quoted as admitting, "I hate the Jews because they violate the law. I hate the synagogue because it has the law and the prophets. It is the duty of all Christians to hate Jews." Now think about that. As a church father, he hates the law. He violates the Torah on every possible way. Now, of course, the Torah is not law, but in terms of being an adversary of the Torah, he is a proclaimed, he is an announced, he is an avowed adversary of the Torah. And then he contradicts himself. He says that not only does he hate the Jews because they violate the law, I hate the synagogue because it has the law and the prophets. It's demonstrating Christianity's hatred of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's why they're relegated to the Old Testament, so that you don't have to pay any attention to them. They want the credibility of those prophetic books, the credibility of God's introduction to humanity. They want to claim they represent that same God, and yet they despise everything he said and did. This is the direct contradiction. I hate the Jews because they violate the law. I hate the synagogue because it has the law. How do you like them apples? It is the duty of all Christians to hate Jews, he wrote. Is it any wonder Yahweh despises Christianity? Viewing those who promote the religion as they have chosen to, the way they've chosen to view Yahudim and his Torah. Chrysostom's Roman Catholic homilies are quoted in seminaries and in religious schools, Catholic schools, and they, even to this day, they are considered model sermons. And as a result of his wholly irrational and misguided perspective on God's people and word, his views have been passed down to succeeding generations of theologians and their parishioners. And as one of the most revered church fathers, his jaundiced and ungodly diatribes have been embraced throughout Christendom. This is how Christianity was born. The 19th century Protestant cleric R.S. Storr called him, quote, one of the most eloquent preachers who ever since apostolic times have brought to men the divine tidings of truth and love, end quote. Imagine that. I mean, where in the world was that man's head? Evidently, insanity is contagious, and it is passed from one person to another through words. A contemporary of Storr, the acclaimed theologian John Henry Cardinal Newman, described Chrysostom as a bright, cheerful, gentle soul with a sensitive heart. To his credit, perhaps he is brightening the darkness of hell today, cheering up those he has beguiled. Now, this is the church. This is the birth of Christianity. This is the time and place that the Christian religion became the official religion of the Roman Empire. This is the time that the Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox Church were born. They were one at this time. This was the totality of Christianity. It was born out of an overt hatred of everything Yahweh loves. I want to change our attention now, and this is something that we'll cover also tomorrow. I won't get through this article today. But when the Pope decided that he was going to endorse Muslims, that he was going to embrace Muslims, that he was going to have the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem give the keynote address in front of the Dome of the Rock during his visit, when he was going to acknowledge that he was flying into the state of Palestine, that what he was doing is aligning Roman Catholicism with Islam against everything that Yahweh loves, his people, his Torah, his land, his covenant. And so with that, I want to share a story of the most overtly Islamic organization on earth today, Boko Haram. This story is out of Nigeria. It was a story that's not covered in the news. I don't know why. It ought to have been. It begins, their faces scratched and bleeding. The pitiful remains of their once smart school uniforms were ripped away and filthy. The two teenage girls were tethered to trees. Their wrists were bound with rope, and they were left in a clearing in the Nigerian brush to die by the Islamic terrorist group Boko Haram. Despite having been raped and dragged through the bush, they were still alive, but just barely, in the sweltering tropical heat and humidity. The grim scene was discovered by a 15-year-old Baba, or a 15-year-old boy named Baba Goni. He says they were seated on the ground at the base of the trees. Their legs were stretched out in front of them. They were hardly conscious. This young 15-year-old boy, Baba Goni, acted as a tour guide for one of the vigilante teams searching for the Nigerian schoolgirls who were abducted from their classrooms last month by Boko Haram. The horrific scene he and his comrades encountered a week after the kidnap, which was now 42 days ago, 43 days ago, on April 15th, was in a thorny scrubland near the village of Baale, an hour's drive from Chibok, where the 276 girls aged 12 to 18 were taken from their boarding school dormitories, with 223 still missing. This was discovered a week after the kidnap. A week after the kidnap, two girls were found barely alive, their wrists bound, tied to a tree, stripped naked, beaten, raped, and barely alive. Why wasn't that story reported? Why did that not make the nightly news? That of the 225 girls that were successfully carried away, 276 were kidnapped, but when one of the vehicles broke down, a number of the girls managed to escape. But when the bodies of, and they were still barely alive, when these two girls were found naked, tied to the tree, raped, beaten, why didn't the entire world scream out in rage against Islam? If the depiction of these girls left in the desert or left in this clearing to die in the sweltering heat, surviving a week without water, without food, exposed, unable to even defend themselves against wild animals, after being beaten and raped, isn't enough to have you hate the religion that justified doing this, that glorified doing this. There's something deeply wrong with you. Now, we're going to cover more of this story when Shattering Myths continues, because the very credibility of this boy, Baba Goni, his story is worth hearing. There's far more horrendous behavior being perpetrated here than just the kidnap of these 200-plus girls. I hope you're asking yourself, why is it that the world's media, why is it the world's politicians didn't speak of this known rape of these two girls, that these girls were bound by their captors, that they were tied to a tree, they were beaten, and they were gang-raped, and then they were left to die? I suspect that the media didn't want you to know that, that the politicians didn't want you to know that, that Mrs. Obama, when she held up the little sign saying, "Bring our girls home," didn't want you to know that. Because if you know that, you're required to ask the question, what is it that turns men into such savages? Why would men working collectively as a unit, as part of an organization, do such a horrible thing? What corrupted them? And when you ask that question, there's only one common denominator among these men: Islam. And what you find if you actually read the Quran and study the Hadith is that Muhammad was a kidnapper too. That Muhammad raped the victims of his terrorist raid, and that he justified his men doing so, and that the Quran says that their bodies were made for Muslims to abuse in this way. The world does not want you to know that, because then you would realize that the war on terror is just a myth. Then you would realize that 9/11 was not a terrorist attack. You'd realize that the problem is Islam. And you would hate the religion as much as I do, because it's the only moral response. In the days following their disappearance, this article says, ragtag groups such as Babas scouring the forest in a convoy of Toyota pickup trucks were the girls' only hope. Why? Because the world didn't give a crap. The world didn't want to deal with it. Now, the world's way too fixated with what's happening in the Ukraine to want to save these girls from being abused, beaten, and raped. But hope had already run out for some of the hostages, according to Baba, when his group spoke to the terrified inhabitants of the village where Boko Haram had pitched camp with their captives for 3 days following the kidnap. Following the kidnap, they were just a short drive from the village. An hour's drive from the village. Just an hour's drive from the village. They had driven an hour. And they camped there for 3 days. And no one sought to rescue these girls. What's wrong with us? For 3 days, they were an hour's drive away. The chilling account he received from the villagers, though unconfirmed by official sources, because the official sources don't want you to know, represents the very worst fears of the families of those 223 girls still missing. Four were killed. In addition to these two that were raped and left to die, four were killed. They were shot by their captives for being, quote, too stubborn and uncooperative. Those four were hastily buried by their brutish kidnappers before they moved on. Everyone we spoke to was full of fear, said Baba. They didn't want to come out of their homes. They didn't want to show us the graves. They just pointed up a walkway. The tiny rural village halfway between Chibok and Damboa in the besieged state of Borno in Nigeria's northeast had been helpless to stop the Boko Haram gang as it swept through on trucks loaded with schoolgirls they had taken at gunpoint before torching the school and surrounding buildings. Venturing further up the track, Baba and his fellow vigilantes found the two girls. Baba, the youngest of the group, stayed back as friends took charge. Now imagine, in this village, Boko Haram now has moved on. They were there for 3 days. They have moved on. Two of these girls are tied to a tree just a short walk from the village, and nobody in that village had the character or courage to go out and free them. That's how afraid they were of this overtly Islamic group, Boko Haram. He said, I used my knife to cut through their ropes to free them. I heard the girls crying and telling others that they had been raped. Then we just left there. I will continue this story. Tomorrow we'll return to Paul's letter later.